DC playing, and the smell of cheap bleach rising to her face. The scent of the jelly overwhelmed her senses. She realized that she had forgotten to bring a spoon or fork with her. But then she realized that she hadn't forgotten at all. This was an impulse buy. Why wasn't she offered one at the register? Probably because the woman didn't assume that she was darting off to eat it in the bathroom. So, okay, fine. She plunged her fingers in and drew a handful of warm green goop to her mouth. Oh, wow. It was the best thing she had ever tasted. This was the best thing she'd ever done in her life, maybe. She smeared another handful across her tongue. It was incredible. What had she been waiting for? What had she been waiting for? Her phone buzzed. She wiped her hands on the single-ply toilet paper and pulled the phone out of her bag. It read, "Told you." She had to sit and think about this for a second. Brock was still pretty damn sure that what she'd been seeing around all day, the ephemeral sweet pepper jelly on a protein bar, on the campus rock, on her new phone, was some kind of madly subjective fever dream. She didn't even bother to tell Patricia about it, and she told Patricia everything. She might have been making it all up. So, that confirmed, she didn't see the harm in writing back. "You weren't fucking kidding," she typed. "This shit is amazing. Why do I like it so much?" "Because I like it," it wrote back. Brock typed, "Why can't you like something non-processed and low-calorie?" "Are we going to New Mexico right now?" it wrote. "No, we're not going at all," Brock typed. "Tough titty." "But the best sweet pepper jelly is in New Mexico," the guy said. "Screw that guy," Brock typed. "No, we're going," it typed back. Bile rose in Brock's throat, and she vomited up her side salad and the recent green pepper jelly all over the tile in front of the toilet. "Did you just make me do that?" she typed. "Yep," it wrote. "Well, fuck you," Brock wrote. If this wasn't happening, and she was hallucinating or dreaming this, she might as well take a hard line. "We're going to New Mexico," it wrote. "It will change your life." Brock threw her phone in her bag. She left the stall, and even though two excessively perfumed chicks were staring at her from over by the sink, she stood there and shoved the last fistfuls of amazing, beautiful jelly into her mouth. When she was done, she cleaned out the last flecks in the jar with her tongue as they watched and threw the empty thing in the bathroom trash. 8:48 p.m. There was an immense noise coming from the main part of the restaurant, like what happens in sports bars during the Stanley Cup or World Series or Super Bowl or that kind of thing. Cheering and thumping and then a huge applause. The woman who was supposed to be behind the register wasn't there. She was standing on the border between the gift shop and the restaurant, watching whatever was happening in the dining room. Everyone that Brock could see had their backs turned to the gift shop. Brock made her move. She grabbed all of the jars of green sweet pepper jelly and a few reds and crammed them into her shoulder bag. As she shoved two more into her pockets, she thought maybe she'd have one now. Why the hell not? The roar of the crowd noise got closer, and Brock rose, fist and mouth full of delicious green sweet pepper jelly. She peeked over the top of the aisle just in time to see her cousin being carried aloft by her softball team and set down on the counter by the register. Benny took off his own Hell Night t-shirt and slid it over Eva. Anne and Tangela raised Eva up again, and the crowd roared. When it finally hit Brock what was happening, she shouted and raised her green-stained fist in the air. Catching her cousin's eye, she pushed toward Eva, reaching for her hand, just as Eva bent at the waist and vomited a flume of steaming brown and red chunks all over the cash register. It smelled like a cross between a fart and a burning tire. The smell made Brock's throat open and evacuate a full 8 ounces of undigested green slime onto the floor. What a scene. People backed away groaning and shouting. Someone called for a janitor. In the midst of it all, glowing with rude joy and shining with vomit, Brock at last grabbed her little cousin's hand and raised it to the sky.
Walleye. It was not just Will Prager's opinion, but also unbiased fact, that in order to get girls in high school, you had to have a thing. Maybe your thing was that your mom or dad was a lawyer, and you lived in a nice house with a pool. Maybe it was rock-hard abs. Maybe your thing was that you were a computer nerd, and you spent prom night in your parents' basement listening to Rush and thinking about string theory. There was someone for everyone, just so long as you were someone. Until freshman year, Will Prager didn't have a thing. He was smart, but not a super genius, and played sports, but not well enough to ever get a scholarship somewhere. Then some seniors who were in a band called Smarmy Kitten invited him personally to one of their shows. Their lead guitarist, Brandon Spencer, who always wore t-shirts of really obscure stuff like Merzbow and Sodic Records, and was the coolest guy in the band, looked Prager in the eye and said, "Hey man, you should come to our gig. You'd like it." Well, he did, and that was it. Ever since, Will Prager's thing was music. In the summer of 05 alone, he drove the 45 minutes from River Falls, Wisconsin to Minneapolis 10 times and saw Built to Spill, Drive By Truckers, Spoon, High Respects, Dillinger Four, Boiled in Lead, My Tierra, Tapes and Tapes, The Owls, and Atmosphere with Brother Ali, mostly with his friends Vic Gupta and Ken Kovacs. He also started a band called The Lonesome Cowboys, with Vic on drums, Ken on bass, Zach Schmetterling on pedal steel, Eric Travis on violin, and Will on lead guitar and vocals. Their thing was that they played sad cowboy music, and played cover songs in the style of sad cowboy music. Their cover of No Diggity was off the chain. It made hot girls forget you were a dork, which is the point of all music. Girls were lucky they didn't have to have a thing. They just had to look nice and come to your shows and not call you all the time about stupid stuff. But the new girl in the back of Killer Keeley's fifth period American history class, first day of school, junior year, she for sure had a thing. She had on oxblood Doc Martens, black nail polish, black miniskirt, bright red manic panic hair, and a white t-shirt that read The Smiths and Meat is Murder. Total goth. "What was North America like before the Europeans arrived?" Killer Keeley asked. Will Prager raised his hand, and Killer Keeley continued looking around the classroom. It was time for Prager to set the tone for how the year was going to go. "Anyone else?" Mr. Keeley asked. He somehow already knew better than to call on Prager, but no one else had his hand up. It was fifth period right after lunch, so everyone was in a food coma, and it was 85 degrees outside, and the question was insultingly broad. "I just want to be in love," Prager said. "Will you help me or not?" "I didn't call on you, William," said Keeley. Prager sang the first lines of "Where is the Love?" And the cute new girl in back, the goth, laughed. Rumor was Killer Keeley had gone soft over the last couple of years. Now, thanks to Prager, he was losing his new batch of juniors in record time. At the end of class, Prager got a good look at the girl who laughed at his heartbreaking rendition of the Roberta Flack, Donnie Hathaway soul classic. She was even hotter than at first glance. She had boobs, and an ass that looked too amazing for mere Wisconsin boys and their cold, jittery hands. He imagined her in Miami, riding a dolphin while wearing a bikini, capsizing sailboats full of horny men. Plus, she was tall, at least 6'2", which was cool with Prager because he was 6'4". And she thought he was funny, which was also pretty sexy. An hour later, walking into Madame Duplessis's seventh period French class, he saw her seated in the back, and probably smiled when he saw her, but tried not to in case she saw him. The seat to her left was open, and even though he didn't like sitting in the back row because his vision wasn't so good, he took it. "Hey," he said, glancing in her direction. "Hey," she said brightly, and even welcomingly, he thought. "What's your name?" he asked.
"Eva," she said.
"You?" Uh-oh. He had to think for a second how to phrase it in a way that sounded memorable. "Will? Will Prager," he said. Now he had to keep the conversation flowing, somehow. "So, you like the Smiths?" he asked, looking at her shirt while simultaneously trying not to stare at her chest.
"Yeah, they're okay," she said.
"You a vegetarian?" he asked.
"No," she said. "I just wanted a Smith shirt. You?"
"Yeah, just started," he said. He'd seen a documentary about chickens at Ken Kovac's house the week before that had converted both him and Ken. It was now another thing they both had, in addition to their band. Madame Duplessis stood in front of the class, dressed for the heat in a sleeveless sundress, straight brown hair glistening under the fluorescent lights. She was kinda cute, but she was also the mom of a kid who was a freshman, so that was weird.
"Regardez ici, s'il vous plaît," Madame Duplessis said.
"A bientôt," Will Prager said to Eva. Damn, that was smooth, he thought, as he turned his attention to the teacher. They had to speak and write things in French for the next 50 minutes, and there was limited time for meaningful interaction until the bell rang, which, after a burning eternity, it finally did. "You like Radiohead?" Will asked Eva. He was hoping that she'd linger and talk with him, but she was clearing her desk too quickly, sweeping her books into a black shoulder bag.
"Yeah, they're cool," she said.
She seemed to be in a hurry. "My band does a couple Radiohead covers," Prager said. He had to work in the fact that he was in a band before it was too late. "We have rehearsal tonight."
"What's the name of the band?" she asked, standing up.
"The Lonesome Cowboys."
"Cool. Maybe I'll check you guys out sometime," she said. "Nice to meet you."
"What are your plans tonight?"
"Going to make French onion soup with my dad," she said. "Catch you tomorrow." And with that, she was gone.
That night when he got home, Prager found this recipe in a cookbook in his dad's kitchen. French onion soup serves 8. 1/4 cup unsalted butter, 5 medium onions, thinly sliced, 1 bay leaf, 1/2 teaspoon dried thyme, 2 tablespoons dry sherry, 3.5 cups beef stock, 1.5 teaspoons kosher salt, 1/2 teaspoon black pepper, 8 slices of French bread toasted, 1.5 cups Gruyere cheese. Heat the butter in a soup pot over medium heat until it is melted. Add the onions, bay leaf, and thyme. After 15 minutes, or as soon as the onions begin to brown, reduce the heat to medium-low and cover, stirring frequently, until the onions assume a deep brown hue about 30 to 40 minutes. Take care not to overcook the onions. Patience is essential for perfect caramelization. Stir in the sherry. Increase the heat to high, stirring vigorously, until all the sherry has cooked off. Stir in the beef stock, bring to a boil, and then simmer for 20 minutes while partially covered. Sprinkle with salt and pepper. Remove the bay leaf before serving. Place 8 oven-proof bowls on baking sheets. Fill each bowl with soup. Top the bowl with 1 thin slice of toasted French bread, and gently cover each with 3 tablespoons of cheese. Bake in an oven at 450 degrees Fahrenheit until the cheese is melted and becoming just a bit brown. Use Gruyere from Switzerland, or you'll be wasting your time. It was so beautiful, and strict, and complicated. Prager could never conceive of making such a meal. That someone his age would make this, a hot girl he liked no less, made him feel inadequate and lustful. Will Prager's father Eli was in the living room, watching the first Monday night football game of the season while Prager sat on the kitchen floor, about 10 feet away, on the linoleum, still poring over the recipe. Eli was shorter and skinnier than his son, but somehow took up more space in a room. His scarred face, long biker beard, and the sharp, greasy smell from his motorcycle shop had the effect of wet wood tossed on a campfire, and no one blocked his path, even at home.
"Hey, Dad," Prager asked, "can we make French onion soup sometime?"
"French onion soup?" Eli asked. "What the hell do you want that for?"
"I don't know, something different," Prager said.
"But what's the deal with Gruyere from Switzerland? This recipe is super anal that the cheese has to be from Switzerland."
"Who the hell knows? That cookbook's from the early 70s. I don't think farmers in Wisconsin made that kind of cheese back then."
"Who got this cookbook?"
"The damn thing belonged to your mother," Eli said. He sometimes talked about her as if her death were a jackknifed semi on the road ahead. Will viewed it more like the giant crack in their concrete driveway. He felt it, saw it, walked over it every day. But it was too big and strange to fix.
"Then we should keep it," Prager said.
His sister Julie jogged into the kitchen and took a protein shake out of the fridge. She was in her usual summer outfit of cotton t-shirt with the neck and sleeves cut off, sports bra and running shorts. It had been 6 months since their mom's death, and Prager was a little worried about how his little sister was handling it. She and their mother hadn't been getting along when their mom died. Since then, Julie had quit the softball team, which was weird, and now only did cross-country running, and hardly had friends over anymore. People kept asking Prager if his sister was depressed, and he wasn't sure what to say. She was a 13-year-old girl, the most puzzling and mutable creature in the known universe. "Dad, you make anything, or are we on our own for dinner?" Julie asked. Eli didn't look up from the game. "If you want to order something, knock yourself out." "God, Dad," Julie said, "you can be so indolent." She was super into big words all the time for no reason. "If you don't like it, you can skedaddle," Eli said.
"What are you doing for food?" Julie asked Will. "I'm going to heat up a microwave burrito," Prager said. "Then I'm going to eat it over the sink like a total baller."
"You're so freaking lazy it kills me. You won't even wash one stupid plate."
"Nope," Prager said, watching the 3-minute digital timer start its countdown. He couldn't stop thinking about Eva for some reason. Her face, her awesome, beautiful height, the things she said and the way she said them. Damn, Will Prager liked a girl. And her thing was cooler than just being a goth. It was food.
Hanging out by the vending machines before school the next day, Prager asked his drummer, Vic Gupta, where to take a girl out to eat in Minneapolis if she's into food. Vic's dad was a tenured professor at UW-River Falls and took his family to some real nice places.
"Let's see. I like Goodfellas," Vic said. "Café en deux toits, Hutmacher's, Locanda di Giorgio, but they're all très cher."
The French sounded fine coming from Vic. He was one of those guys who wore a tie to school, and the Nils P. Haugen Senior High standards of taste only required that you wear a shirt with no swear words on it.
"Who's the girl?"
"She's new. Her name is Eva Torvald."
"New blood," said Vic.
"Go big, Prager. Blow her away. A first date calls for the most opulent luxury."
"Well, that's kind of the opposite of what I've been doing my whole life," Will said. "I thought you didn't want to set the bar too high right away."
"You're single now, right? That means that all of your previous plans have failed. Do you like this girl?"
"I think the most ever."
"Then you, sir, have no choice."
It took forever for fifth period to come around. She looked even more amazing than he remembered. She had almost the same outfit on except a Nick Cave shirt this time.
"How was the French onion soup?" he asked.
He had figured this out with his last girlfriend, Women love it when you remember shit they tell you and love it more when you repeat it back to them. But in this case, he was genuinely curious about the soup.
Oh, it was okay. Thanks for asking, Eva said.
Just okay, huh?
Yeah. My dad bought me blue cheese by accident instead of Gruyere because it was cheaper. So it wasn't exactly how it's supposed to be. I guess the cheese really overpowered the broth.
You know, for French onion soup, the Gruyere from Switzerland is the best.
Wow, she said. I wouldn't know.
Will had thought for a long time about how he was going to phrase his next question. The big one. He wasn't dealing with his freshman ex-girlfriend anymore. This girl was a sophisticated junior, and she was seriously into food. He took a deep breath.
How'd you like to go on a culinary adventure?
With you?
Killer Keeley rapped Prager's desk with a ruler.
William, he said, front row.
Damn! Keeley picked a crappy time to get his groove back.
Yes, Prager said, looking back at Eva as he moved up four desks. Sure, sounds fun, she said.
And her smile scattered every other thought in his mind. He spent the rest of the class entranced, watching Keeley's mouth make noise as he luxuriated in the hopeful blood shimmering through his veins.
Eli was eating Fritos out of the bag and reading the sports section when Will walked into the kitchen and leaned against the counter.
Dad, I really need to use the car Friday.
Eli didn't look up.
Why? What's happening?
I got a date with a girl.
Ah, that's funny. I have a date that night myself.
You have a date?
This was the first Will had heard of his dad dating anyone since their mom died. It had never even occurred to him that his dad would ever date anyone again, much less have sex or even want to. Considering how his mom died, hurled from the back of his dad's Harley Panhead, in an accident that left Eli with just a sprained ankle, and also considering that Eli had not been on a motorcycle since then, it seemed to follow that his dad would be in a state of perpetual mourning, and this course of action had Will's and Julie's approval. Anything else felt like hateful treason.
Yeah, a woman I met at church.
That was another thing, much less devastating, but dumbly annoying. Eli had started going to early services at a Lutheran church after the funeral. Prager totally didn't get this at all. Prager's grandpa on his dad's side was a non-practicing Ashkenazi Jew named Frank, who had had the misfortune of marrying a devout Lutheran woman named Greta, who raised all of their kids, including Eli, strict Missouri Synod Lutheran. And even though Will wasn't technically Jewish because neither his mom nor his grandma's was Jewish, being raised Jewish would have been a thing, and Prager knew he would have loved it. Eli, meanwhile, refused to recognize any of the traditions, mostly because he didn't know them. So it was up to Prager to hold his own Passover Seder, and observe the high holy days, and set out a menorah on Hanukkah and get noisemakers for Purim. Eli neither encouraged nor prevented any of this. Prager, however, totally disapproved of his own dad's religious practices, especially if it meant that he was using Lutheran Bible study class as a meat market.
Oh, Prager said. Where are you going?
Just Luigi's downtown there.
Oh, was all he said. It was too much to take in.
You can have the car that night, if you don't mind dropping me off.
Oh, Prager said. What an awful bargain. What a shadow cast over what could have been such an incredible night.
Hey, Eva said before fifth period the next day. Just letting you know, my dad wants me home by 9 at the latest.
Oh, Prager said. That was sure some overprotective dad bullshit right there. It just about killed having dinner in Minneapolis, unless they ate at 6 or something. What a better world it would be without people's dads.
And he wants to meet you, Eva said.
Up here, William, said Killer Keeley, pointing at Prager's head. Now!
Prager turned up the current 89.3 as he drove his dad down Main Street toward Luigi's.
They were playing Ashes of American Flags by Wilco. His dad turned down the volume without asking.
"Hey, so who are you going out with tonight?" his dad asked, unnervingly chipper.
"Just this new girl?" Prager didn't feel like talking. He felt almost like his mom was still alive and he was driving his dad to meet his dad's mistress. He thought for a second about rear-ending the car in front of him, just to put the kibosh on his dad's awful plans, but the fact that he had his own wildly anticipated date greatly overrode any impulse to sabotage his father's.
"What's she like?"
"I don't know yet."
"Well, I'll tell you about the woman I'm meeting. Her name is Pat. She's a widow. Her husband died 3 years ago. She's got one kid, a little boy named Sam, and she's younger than me, 35.
"Sounds great," Prager said.
He hoped that his dad came across like how he really was, not how he was behaving tonight, all bright-voiced and interested, and would drive this woman and all women away screaming forever. There was reason to be hopeful for this. He stopped at the curb down the block from Luigi's.
"Is right here okay?"
"Sure," Eli said. "Well, good luck on your date, and we'll swap notes in the morning, huh?"
Eli raised his eyebrows in that hubba-hubba motion. Mortifying. "See ya," Prager said.
"Love you, kid," Eli said,
and walked to the front door 15 minutes early for his horrible date with the Lutheran widow. Eva and her family lived in a stout, tan-colored apartment building farther down Main near the Knowles Center. The paint on the side of the building was chipping and faded, and the parking lot was mostly filled with cars that looked like they were abandoned at an impound lot. Old, but none old enough to be cool. It was not the sort of place where you'd ever guess someone as amazing as Eva might live. Prager had probably passed this place a million times and never really noticed it. Now he was here, parking his dad's Ford Taurus in the lot, his heart punching his sternum, walking across fast food wrappers and cigarette butts to reach her door. There was an RC Cola vending machine outside the lobby under an overhang. Someone had taped a handwritten sign to it that read, "Busted." "Hey, Will," she said. He didn't even see her standing there, watering plants on the first floor patio. She was wearing a black baby doll dress, a German army jacket, and fingerless gloves. That outfit and her smile made him want to throw himself at her feet.
"Oh, hey," he said, not taking off his sunglasses.
"I guess we better skedaddle."
Did he just say that? God, he was a dork sometimes.
"Hey, come in for a sec. My dad wants to meet you."
He was hoping she'd forgotten that part.
The man introduced as Jar Torvald sat in a poofy, navy blue lounge chair, watching the game show What a Life, and drinking Old Style out of a can tucked in a bright blue beer cozy. He stood up after Eva and Prager closed the door behind them. Prager's first impression was that he hardly looked like Eva at all. This guy was short, fat, bald, and wearing a half-buttoned short-sleeved shirt, a loosened blue tie, and stained sweatpants. He did not look like a man capable of cooking, or even eating French onion soup with blue cheese, let alone with Gruyere from Switzerland.
"How do you do?" Jarl asked, after they were introduced from afar. He buttoned his shirt to the top and straightened his tie.
Prager took in the small, dim apartment as he walked over to the living room. Even with the porch drapes closed and only the kitchen light on, he could see how underfurnished the place was. The living room had no couch, just a lounge chair and a folding chair, a black TV and DVD player on a cheap particle board stand, a glass table in the dinette with two padded folding chairs that was stacked with sports magazines and beer cans, and nothing on any of the walls except a giveaway wall calendar from a local bank. It looked like the apartment of a man who lived alone. There was no evidence of a teenage girl anywhere.
"So I hear you're in a band," Jarl said, and took another swallow of Old Style. His beer koozie said, "Keeping it real," and had a picture of a fisherman on it. "What kind of music?"
"Sad country ballads," Prager said.
You like Jimmy Buffett?
Weird question, Prager thought. Jimmy Buffett wasn't close to what he would call country. He thought that Jimmy Buffett was music for people who hated music. But he looked at Jarl there, the father of the object of his affection, considered the man's decisive way of phrasing his opinion, and said, "He's okay, I guess."
"Okay, he's the most influential musician of the 20th century. That's what he is."
Not even close, Prager thought. Not even in the top 1,000. Maybe he was somewhere in the 1400s, between Poco and Edison Lighthouse.
"So your parents okay with you being a country musician?"
"Yeah," Prager said. "My dad doesn't mind. And my mom, she passed away, but I like to think that wherever she is, she's a fan."
Prager nodded and pursed his lips. He didn't talk about her often, but when he did, he badly wanted to bring her up in conversation like he was over it, so he could put other people at ease.
"We should go, Dad," Eva said.
"Oh, yeah, that's right,"
the old man said, exuding the enthusiasm and authority of a school custodian.
"Be back by 9.
"I know."
Eva kissed Jarl on the cheek and led Prager to the front door.
"Hey," Jarl said, "where are you two going?"
Eva looked at Prager as if to say, "Better tell him." "Steamboat Inn, down in Prescott," Prager said. It was the nicest restaurant he could find nearby. He'd wanted it to be a surprise. Eva looked at Prager as he unlocked the passenger side door for her.
"I'm sorry about your mom," she said. "I didn't know."
"It's sad, but it happens," he said, repeating the line he always said in this situation, staring past her at the grocery store across the street.
"My mom died too, 2 years ago," Eva said.
"Really?" he said. "Of what?"
"Lung cancer." "Yours?"
"Motorcycle accident."
"Come here," she said, and hugged him, right there in the parking lot, in front of everybody letting their kids out of minivans and hauling bags of groceries and driving by in sports cars. When, after at least 10 seconds, they let go of each other, him first, Prager looked at her. She now looked older, like a woman. A woman whose hand he could take and stride into the darkness with. Because she was a woman whose darkness matched his own. And they could fix each other without even trying. They wouldn't even have to talk about it.
In the car, Eva explained that she and her dad had moved to River Falls from Mankato, where Jarl had been working as a parking lot attendant before he was let go after some misunderstanding. Through no fault of his own, she said, it had taken him a long time to find work. A company in River Falls called Loomis Home Products that made novelty beer koozies for truck stop gift shops finally hired him part-time last month to work in shipping. She asked Prager if he wanted a beer koozie, and he said sure. So she dug around in her black bag and, laughing, gave him one that read, "Sexy Grandpa."
"I will treasure it always," he said. He realized that might have sounded sarcastic, but even if it sounded cheesy, he meant it. She'd given him something, something of hers, and it felt like a piece of her heart, and confirmation that she liked him. He didn't know where else to put it for the moment, so he placed Sexy Grandpa on his dashboard between his eyes and the road, and it glowed under the passing lights. The radio was playing Super Bon Bon by Soul Coughing. He turned up the volume way past where his dad had left it. He rolled down the driver's side window and stuck his hand out into the night air, the song's deep upright bass riff blasting through their bodies and bouncing off the passing trees and fence posts and mosquitoes toward the sky. Then she rolled down her window and stuck her arm out as well. And he smiled. And maybe she smiled at him too. The Steamboat Inn, a docked steamboat attached to a full restaurant on the shoreline of the St. Croix River, was even fancier than he expected. They had cloth napkins and candles on the tables, and no TVs anywhere.
He had made a reservation, which he had never done before, and he'd hoped that was as impressive to Eva as it was to him. It came out while they were parking that Eva had only eaten out twice all year until then, both times during her family's move from Mankato to River Falls, while their kitchen implements were packed in a box in a U-Haul. She had rarely even eaten in restaurants while growing up, just for birthdays and special occasions, she said. Except for a trip to Chicago she'd taken at age 11, where she ate out for almost every meal. The way Eva's eyes glimmered when she recounted that memory assured Will Prager that he'd done the right thing for their first outing, and certainly taken her to the right place. They got a nice table, not too far away from the windows, with a view of the river, though at dusk they could mostly just see the reflection of the interior of the restaurant. They were definitely the youngest people there who weren't there with their parents, and that felt positively badass. The menu, though, was really expensive, like over $15 just for most of the dinners. So it was a good thing he'd saved money from his summer job at Sam Goody. One of the cheapest things was the Caesar salad for $7.
"The Caesar salad looks interesting," he said.
"Grilled walleye pike," she said, noting a menu item that cost $18, "with dinner salad and choice of potato." Prager was used to restaurants where college students or even high schoolers worked as servers. The Steamboat Inn, they got a woman who was probably in her mid-20s, an official adult. She came to their table and asked if they wanted anything besides water.
"Do you have root beer?" he asked.
They did.
"I'll stick with water, thanks," Eva said.
"Do we order now?" he asked the waitress.
She said, "Sure, if they're ready," and asked them if perhaps they wanted to hear the specials first.
"Absolutely," Eva said.
The special was roasted maple-glazed Canadian duck over a bed of saffron wild rice, served with Savoy cabbage for $28. Prager's palms were sweating. His dad didn't let him have a credit card, and he'd only brought $35 with him for the whole date.
"Sounds good," Eva said. "But would you recommend the walleye pike?"
"Absolutely," the waitress said, noting that it was freshly caught in Mille Lacs Lake.
"Wow! So you know the specific lake the fish is from?"
The waitress nodded.
"That's cool," Prager said. "Never heard of that."
Eva ordered the walleye, with a baked potato and no dressing on the salad. The waitress asked Prager if he wanted chicken on his Caesar salad for an extra $3.99.
"Absolutely not," he said. "It's a moral issue."
When the waitress left, Eva looked Prager in the eyes, all serious. "Can I tell you why I agreed to all this?"
Sure, Prager said. The question jolted him. She hadn't even seen his band yet. What else could it be? Was it because he was cute and funny? That'd be nice, maybe.
"That thing you said the first day of history class when you said, 'I just want to be in love'? Did you mean that?"
He'd said it to be funny. He hadn't really thought whether he meant it or not. While he was thinking of how to respond, she leaned in toward him.
"Because I thought it was the coolest, most vulnerable, most honest thing I've ever heard anyone say in a classroom ever."
"I guess I did mean it," he said.
"Good," she said, and leaned back in her chair. "You shall promise."
"Do you have a favorite variety of cuisine?" Prager asked, after a time.
What sophisticated phrasing, he told himself.
If someone was listening to this dinner conversation on the radio, they could seriously be mistaken for adults.
"Nah," she said, "I eat pretty much everything. I used to really like spicy food, but not so much anymore."
"Why not?" Prager asked.
"I ate too much one time, and after that I had to give it a break for a while."
"I love spicy stuff. I put Tabasco sauce on almost everything. I put it on yogurt even."
For some reason, she looked at him the way a mom might look at a teenager who had just bragged about being able to dress himself.
"What?" he asked.
"You shouldn't want to do that," she said,
you should want to taste the actual flavors of what you're eating.
You have a point, he said. I'll never use Tabasco sauce again.
He'd read that being in an adult relationship means having a willingness to change, knowing when you're wrong and owning up to it. That's the definition of being a man. He was thrilled for the opportunity to mature before her eyes like this.
Okay, she shrugged.
When the food arrived, the waitress asked if he wanted pepper on his Caesar salad, and held out this long wooden pepper mill thing, which he'd seen before at places once or twice but never really tried.
Just a little, he said. I want to be able to taste the salad.
Eva took one bite of her grilled walleye. Prager watched her as she chewed the fish but didn't swallow, instead moving it around in her mouth. Was this how people who were into food behaved? It was fascinating.
How is it? He asked.
It's very good. Just a little heavy on the rosemary, maybe. Prager hadn't even remembered seeing rosemary in the description of the dish.
Where's the rosemary? He asked,
pointing at the pine-colored flecks on the fillets.
Is it that green stuff?
No, that's parsley, she said. They probably got rid of the rosemary, but if you've had it before, you know the taste. She put a bite on her fork and held it out. Prager considered reminding her that he was a vegetarian, but with Eva Torvald about to feed him at the table from her own fork, he felt he could make an exception one time.
Yep, absolutely, he said.
He had no idea what rosemary even tasted like. A few minutes later, the waitress came by with the water pitcher and asked how was everything. Prager said,
good. Just a shade too much rosemary in her walleye.
The waitress stared at Prager as if he was talking in code.
Okay, she said. She'd let the chef know.
Otherwise it's real good, Eva said as the waitress walked away.
Want to try some of my salad? Prager asked.
No, that's okay, she said, slicing her walleye into small bites, spearing one with a fork she dangled from her grip in the style of an old-timey flapper with a cigarette holder. Prager found her effortless elegance almost heart-busting.
You didn't have to volunteer that information. I haven't had a lot of walleye in my life, but this is probably the best I've ever had.
Weird that it's from a specific lake, was all Prager could think to say.
I know, right? I wonder how much of it has to do with the lake where the walleye's from, if that's such a big deal.
Neither of them noticed the wiry old Native American guy in white clothes and a gray ponytail standing next to their table until he spoke.
Pardon me, I'm Job Farnham. I'm the head chef here.
Hi, Prager said, his mouth full. He and Eva looked at each other. Were they in trouble?
Now Prager felt like an idiot for complaining on her behalf. He just ruined the entire date, he knew it.
It's a slow night, the man continued, so I just wanted to get a look at who's given me notes on my grilled walleye.
Eva looked up at him.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry, she said. It's real good, it's probably the best fish I ever had.
Don't be sorry, Job said. I'm going to ask you this. Normally, the customer who orders this dish pairs it with the Sauvignon Blanc, which pairs well with rosemary. So, let's say I'm curious how this dish can be better prepared for someone who is unable to partake in the wine pairing. What would you do differently? I'm all ears.
Maybe just a little bit less rosemary, Eva said. I think everything else in here is real good.
You perceive the rosemary, which isn't even on the plate. What else do you think is in this dish?
You want me to taste it and tell you what's in it?
Prager quit eating and crossed his arms. Now the chef guy was getting real annoying. The conversation had been going flawlessly until he showed up.
Give it a shot, Job said.
Oh, boy. Eva swallowed a bite and looked up at Job. Let's see. Parsley, lemon, rosemary, black pepper, salt, and I think it's cooked in butter and something else. Some kind of fat or tallow, maybe. I'm not sure.
Duck fat. Would have been shocked if you got that one. But very good. That was everything.
It was? It's that simple?
Doesn't have to be complicated. This dish won the silver medal at the Taste of Wisconsin last year.
Wow, really?
It's mostly dependent on how fresh the ingredients are. Oh, and that said, you did forget one thing. This was starting to make Prager want to kick the guy. He caught the waitress's eye, raised the bread basket. They had given them a whole basket of free bread for no reason, and requested more free bread.
Oh, duh, the walleye, Eva said.
Do you make walleye at home?
We can't really afford that kind of stuff, Eva said, averting his gaze.
How often do you cook at home?
Every day, usually twice, Eva said, looking back up at Job. It's just me and my dad, and he doesn't cook, so someone's got to.
And so what do you make at home?
I try to do something different every day. I work part-time at a health food store, so I get a discount on stuff.
Prager finally had an in. She works at Whole Earth, he said. Job nodded. What was the last thing you made?
Last night I made a vegetarian lasagna with quinoa pasta.
Prager perked up. I like quinoa. It's got a lot of protein.
Eva took another bite of her walleye. I'd love to see how you did this sometime. It's really an amazing piece of fish.
If you can come by around 3 or 4 on a weekday, sure, Job said. Just call me and we'll figure something out.
What? You're kidding.
Sure, if you can bring me a few things from Whole Earth. The restaurant will pay you back.
Oh, my God, sure, Eva said. Whatever you want, I'll use my employee discount.
It was weird for Prager to see Eva so in awe of somebody. I should get back to the kitchen. Nice to meet you, Job said, shaking Prager's hand. And very nice to meet you, Miss...
Torvald. Eva Torvald, she said.
Hope to see you soon, Job said, and walked away. Wow, it was cool for you to know those ingredients, Prager said.
But Eva wasn't finished with this moment yet. She was still glowing for at least a minute afterwards.
Prager dug back into his salad. Just a shade too much lettuce in this, he said.
At the end of the meal, the waitress asked them if they cared to see the dessert menu and set it down in front of them anyway.
Nope, I'm totally full, Prager said. Full, full, full.
You had too much bread, Eva said.
Yeah, I'll order the blackberry sorbet, she said.
That was a $5 dessert. With the walleye, the salad, and the root beer, they were now at $31.92 before tax and tip. He held up his flip phone for her perusal.
Are you sure? It's 8:26 p.m., he said,
now grateful for her curfew. Oh, we can fudge it a little, she said. My dad likes you. He won't mind. The waitress brought the bill over. $33.52.
I got it, Prager said.
Wasn't the tip supposed to be like 15%? This was going to be like 5%. Which is probably real bad. Or were waitresses just happy to get a tip at all? He'd been watching the people who'd finished eating, and they were all leaving cash on their tables.
Well, thank you, Eva said, putting her bag back down on the floor. I actually forgot my wallet anyway.
Prager wondered if there was still change in the ashtray of his dad's car. Then he saw the waitress walk down the hall toward the restrooms.
Let's skedaddle, he said,
cramming the contents of his wallet under the bill as he stood to pull out Eva's chair for her.
Well, what an amazing culinary experience, Eva said at 8:59 p.m. when Prager's car parked in front of her apartment.
Yeah, thanks for coming, he said.
He didn't want to risk even the current playing a vastly inappropriate song in this moment like, say, The Distance by Cake. Or something by Rage Against the Machine or something. So he had his Built to Spill Mix CD playing, and the song Car was on. The absolute perfect soundtrack for how he had premeditated this moment in his head.
No, thank you, she said, still sitting in his idling car not moving.
No, thank you, he said.
It was a great night, she said.
Yeah, he said. She sighed, and then she kissed him, and they kissed for a long-ass time. On the way home, his lips hurt, and his hard-on wouldn't go away, and he had to turn the defroster on and roll down the windows as he drove home. It fogged the car up so bad. Prager lay down on top of his bed that night, in his clothes, staring up toward the Radiohead poster tacked to the drop ceiling in his bedroom, and he put on the song In the Aeroplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel. Ever since he first heard this song, he wanted someone to think of when he heard it. And now he had her. He had the beautiful face he had found in this place, and he turned off the lights and put the song on repeat. A more complete man than he was that morning. Lying there in the dark, falling in love with somebody.
So why didn't you have sex with her all night long? Vic Gupta asked him. If you miss band practice to be with a woman, you should be having sex all night long. In fact, you should be late for school today because you should still be banging her.
Prager leaned against the wall opposite the Pepsi machine. The night was almost perfect the way it was.
I should be able to hear you from here. You should be having sex so loud right now I should start to wonder if I'm the one having sex.
The only problem was the chef. He came out of the kitchen in the middle of our meal and totally hit on her.
Why, that's rather gauche of him.
Yeah, he was telling her, like, I'll teach you to cook walleye, like, right there in front of me.
You should be the one cooking walleye for her, my friend.
Well, yeah, but one of their deals is their walleye is super fresh, like, right out of Mille Lacs Lake. Nothing I can just go buy in a store is going to compete with that.
Then I know what you do, Prager. You go straight to that lake.
Prager had to make the most of his few moments in fifth period before Killer Keeley moved him to the front row. He saw Eva wearing a plain black V-neck T-shirt and skinny black jeans, and her presence suffocated all of his big plans to say the cute things he'd practiced in the bathroom mirror. He hadn't even texted her since last night, and even though he'd assembled a perfect image of her in his head, it still paled beneath the force of her face and body in real life. Even as she sat slumped in her desk writing something in pen on the side of her hand, everything about her seemed fragrant and American and glowed like neon. He walked up to her, unaware of just how much he was smiling. She was smiling too, maybe back at him, maybe because he was. "Hey," he said. He looked at what was written on her hand. It was the word moon glow. "Hey," she smiled. There wasn't much time to act, but in 20 seconds he'd secured a decisive yes for an all-day fishing date that Saturday. He was getting better at this. Prager waited until Wednesday to ask his dad permission to put a canoe on top of the car and use it for a full Saturday. His dad was in the garage, underneath the Ford, his legs sticking out toward the doorway to the kitchen where Prager was standing. A transistor radio in the garage was playing In the Mood for a Melody by Robert Plant. It was another beautiful September day outside, but the garage door was closed and the air had the warm, sweet stink of oil.
"Dad, is it okay if I put a canoe on the car?" Prager asked. "What the hell do you want to do that for?" Eli said. "Some kind of joke?"
"No, to drive up to Mille Lacs Lake on Saturday to go fishing. What are you doing to it right now?"
Eli pulled himself out from under the car. His face and hands were smudged with black. "Just changing the oil. Who are you going fishing with?"
"That girl Eva," he said.
"Oh," Eli said. "In that case, I approve. Bring her over. I'd like to meet her."
"Well, we've only been out once, Dad."
Eli seemed to ignore that. "I'm going to have Pat Jorgensen over for dinner on Sunday. She's excited to meet you and Julie."
"Who's Pat Jorgensen?"
"My date from last Friday."
This took a moment to sink in. "I'm not even sure if I'll be here," Prager said.
You'll be here, or no car on Saturday. How's that? Eli said, and wheeled himself back under the Ford. Before he met Eva on Saturday morning, he had to stop by his bass player Ken Kovac's place to borrow Ken's parents' canoe and tie it down to the roof of the car. Their house was where the Lonesome Cowboys practiced. Ken was the fifth child of five and the last one at home, and his parents, Arnie and May, seemed eager to have his friends around. They were generous in the way of people running a garage sale who give things away to the folks who come at the end. In the meantime, he looked up the word Moonglow because it had been bothering him, and he felt it would have been dorky to ask her. He wanted to know what she knew without her having to tell him. It seemed more manly that way, so he looked it up on the internet. He doubted it was the Benny Goodman tune. He narrowed it down to either the magnolia tree or the yellow-orange heirloom tomato, and knowing her, it was probably the tomato. Did she want Moonglow tomatoes? He would buy some for her if she did. He hoped that they were hard to find, and that he'd still somehow find them, and better yet, somehow sneak them into her locker as a surprise. Romantic gifts were so much better when they were rare, personal, and unexpected. Maybe he'd fill her locker with Moonglow tomatoes and wouldn't even leave a note. But perhaps it could wait until he knew for sure that she meant the tomatoes. In any case, his most significant gift to her was already in progress, cost him absolutely nothing but time, and would be ready in 2 days tops. He texted her from the parking lot, and almost didn't recognize her at first when she came outside wearing a white crewneck shirt, a baseball cap, and tan pants with a lot of pockets. Her nails were still black, and she had lipstick and eye makeup on, but otherwise she barely looked like a goth anymore. "Hey, cool outfit," Prager said, only because he thought everything she wore looked great on her. "Thanks. Closest thing I had to fishing clothes." "Good-looking canoe." She tossed some whole-earth bags full of cooking supplies in the back of the car, and when she got in, they kissed, briefly, like a couple that's been going out for a while. "So, how was your Friday night?" she asked. "Pretty mellow," Prager said. He couldn't muzzle his enthusiasm for his big personal surprise any longer. "I actually started writing a song for you. You want to know what it's called?" "What?" "Steamy Night on a Steamboat." Eva laughed. "How does it go?" "Wait until it's done and I'll play it for you," he said. He'd written a song for a girl twice before, and man, oh man, did those end up being some memorable nights. "Okay," she said. "Where are the poles and the bait and everything?" "All that stuff's in the trunk. The bait we can get up there at a gas station." It had been a while, but as a kid he'd been fishing a bunch of times, usually with uncles or grandparents. His own parents hardly used their poles. Prager didn't even ask his dad if he could borrow them. "I can't wait to grill some fresh walleye," she said, and she touched his arm as he drove and kept it there. The current was playing Fade Into You by Mazzy Star, which was incredible. And he wished the song would last forever and her hand would never let him go, even if it was really awkward for her to hold it there like that. While on the 169 North into Pine Tree Country, he found himself talking about his dad's dating life. He didn't plan on it, it just happened. The idea of his dad going out on dates with people and maybe even sleeping with people was like a nuclear bomb falling on a pit of toxic waste in his brain. And if he didn't have Eva in his life to distract him and make him feel good, who knows what he'd be capable of. "The worst thing is," Prager said, "he's not ready." "How do you know?" She had her hand near his leg while he drove. "You can just tell by being around him," Prager said. "He's a lot angrier. He hardly listens to me or Julie about anything. He's just going to break this stupid woman's heart." "How do you know she's stupid?" Eva asked. "She must be if she's dating him, in the state he's in." "Have you met her?" "Nope, and don't want to either. I guess she's a widow too, so maybe she's just desperate." "People need people," Eva said. "What's wrong with that?" That sentiment kind of pissed Prager off. It missed the point entirely. "Well, has your dad dated anyone since your mom died? I don't imagine that was a day that you circled on your wall calendar." He's not even my real dad, Eva said, matching his piqued tone. Prager stared straight ahead at the road. He didn't know how to respond. Unfortunately, Eva spoke next, her voice now much softer. I'm sorry, I don't know why I said that. Nobody knows I know that. Well, like my cousins do, but that's it. Prager glanced at her face. She didn't look back at him. How did you find out? I found my birth certificate the last time we moved. Wow. So, you know...